This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. There's been more missile tests from North Korea. We get more on the story. AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer.
North Korea says leader Kim Jong-un has supervised tests of long-range cruise missiles, which he described as a successful demonstration of his military's expanding nuclear strike capabilities and readiness for actual war. South Korean officials say Kim may also conduct a nuclear test in the coming weeks or months, escalating a pressure campaign aimed at forcing the United States to accept the idea of the North as a nuclear power and to be able to negotiate concessions from a position of strength. Analysts say Kim is exploiting the distraction created by Russia's war on Ukraine, using it as a window to accelerate arms development as he pursues a full-fledged nuclear arsenal that could viably threaten regional U.S. allies and the United States. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
A U.S. jury ordered far-right conspiracy theorist Alex Jones on Wednesday to pay nearly $1 billion and damages for falsely claiming that the deadly 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting was a hoax. 20 children and 6 teachers died. The jury in Connecticut, the state where the massacre occurred, awarded $965 million to the families of 8 Sandy Hook victims and an FBI agent who brought the defamation case against Jones. Several family members in the courtroom were crying out loud as the damage awards were read. Jones was not there. A Texas jury in August ordered Jones to pay $50 million to the parents of another slain child. As always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. Also, on the VOA mobile app, via remote. This is VOA News. The United States on Wednesday said that reviving the 2015 Iran nuclear deal is not our focus right now, saying Tehran had showed little interest in reviving the pact and that Washington was concentrating on how to support Iranian protesters. Asked if the United States was interested in pursuing talks to revive the pact, under which Iran curbed its nuclear program in return for economic sanctions relief, according to a State Department spokesman, Ned Price, adding that Iran had made it very clear that it is not a deal that they have been prepared to make. He said the deal certainly does not appear imminent. U.S. President Joe Biden is on the second stop of his 3-state tour of the western U.S. Earlier, he designated the first national monument of his administration at Camp Hale, a World War II-era training site in the state of Colorado. He said the choice of this state was fitting for this act.
When you think about the national beauty of Colorado and the history of our nation, you find it here. More than 50,000 acres, including the 10-mile range, soaring peaks and steep canyons, black bears, bald eagles, moose, mountain lions.
Mr. Biden called the protecting treasured lands that tell the story of America, called for that. He's out to promote his record with less than a month to go for the crucial midterm elections. A former employee of Donald Trump has told federal agents the former president asked four boxes of records to be moved within his Florida home after receiving a government subpoena demanding their return. The Washington Post is reporting on Wednesday. The testimony of the key witness, coupled with surveillance footage of the Justice Department also obtained, represents some of the strongest known evidence to date of possible obstruction of justice by the former Republican president. The FBI conducted a court-approved search on August 8th at Trump's home at the Mar-a-Lago estate in Palm Beach, seizing more than 11,000 documents, including about 100 marked as classified. The document investigation is one of several legal woes Trump is facing as he considers whether to run for president in 2024. Well, the United States plans to increase security and humanitarian assistance to the people of Haiti while imposing visa restrictions on current and former officials involved in criminal gang operations that are blocking supplies at the Caribbean nation as that nation battles an outbreak of cholera. But the U.S. is reviewing Haiti's request for international specialized armed forces to stop gang violence in the island nation. Via remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Thursday, October 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Western powers pledge powerful air defense systems for Ukraine following a barrage of Russian missile strikes.
Looks like there's some positive movement in what's going to be given to Ukraine. Ukraine actually sent these NATO leaders a wish list, an urgent wish list of weapons that they need.
A UN report finds migrants in Libya are subjected to systematic human rights violations and abuse.
They say the migrants are forced to choose between returning to the countries they fled because of unsafe or unsustainable conditions or facing continued ill treatment in Libya.
Want to live forever? A look at a company that cryopreserves those with hopes of being revived in the future. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Western powers have pledged to supply Ukraine with more powerful air defense systems following a furious barrage of retaliatory Russian missile strikes. The attacks included one that temporarily knocked Europe's biggest nuclear power plant off the power grid on Wednesday. This as U.S. President Joe Biden on Wednesday told reporters that the recent Russian attacks on civilian infrastructure in Ukraine were, quote, brutal, unquote, and beyond the pale, unquote. Air raid sirens sounded across large swaths of Ukraine for a third day on Wednesday, and there were reports of some shelling, but no sign of a repeat of the intensive countrywide strikes of the previous 2 days. For more, I spoke with VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob.
Reporters spoke to both the top U.S. general, General Mark Milley, he's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, after the talks that they had today. And it looks like there's some positive movement in what's going to be given to Ukraine. Ukraine actually sent these NATO leaders a wish list, an urgent wish list of weapons that they need. And top of this wish list we saw are these things called MLRS. Those are tracked rocket systems. They stand for multiple launch rocket systems. They're bigger. They're capable of launching 12 rockets before reloading. We've talked about HIMARS, those highly mobile rocket systems. They can launch 6 rockets. And the difference between them is rather than having tracks, they have wheels. So they're more mobile, but they don't always pack as much power. And as preparing for the winter, Western officials are looking at the situation on the ground and thinking that perhaps the MLRS will be more effective against the Russians.
How does the Pentagon and U.S. defense officials respond to some criticism that it took almost a carpet bombing of Kyiv and other Ukrainian cities for the U.S. and other Western allies to actually see the importance of arming Ukraine with air defense?
Just look at the numbers. There's been about $16.8 billion that have gone to Ukraine in recent months. So that is a huge amount of money. So they have been providing these different weapon systems, along with the training that is needed for these weapon systems, to Ukraine throughout this process. I think that General Mark Milley did a great job explaining to reporters today why certain pieces of weaponry have to arrive when they do, because he explained to reporters that Ukrainians are wanting a complete defense of their air system. Their skies cannot be completely covered. There are going to be some missed spots, but in order to have a complete air defense system, you need to have an array of short range, you need to have an array of medium range to target those medium, any of those medium attacks that are coming in from the Russians, and you need to have some long range weapons. And on top of having all of that, you have to make sure that the equipment and the weapons that you have the ability to communicate to each other. Because if you don't, your weapon system is flawed and it's compartmentalized and then it's not as whole as it needs to be to defend the entire sovereign territory of Ukraine. And so that is what the West is working really hard to do, to provide these systems to Ukraine, knowing that there are certain things that they just need immediately.
That's VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob speaking with me from the Pentagon. A new UN report finds migrants in Libya are subject to systematic human rights violations and abuse to compel them to accept so-called assisted returns to their countries of origin. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Authors of the report say migrants in Libya are trapped in an untenable situation. They say the migrants are forced to choose between returning to the countries they fled because of unsafe or unsustainable conditions or facing continued ill treatment in Libya. The report says migrants frequently are compelled to accept assisted return to escape abusive detention conditions. These, it says, include threats of torture, sexual violence, enforced disappearance, and extortion. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani notes that assisted returns in principle are meant to be voluntary.
However, the report finds that in reality, many migrants in Libya are unable to make a truly voluntary decision to return in accordance with international human rights laws and standards. Many of them find they have no choice but to return to the same circumstances that made them leave their countries in the first place.
The UN reports roughly 600,000 migrants comprising more than 40 nationalities are in Libya today. Among them are some 43,000 registered refugees and asylum seekers. Since 2015, the UN reports more than 60,000 migrants have been repatriated to different countries of origin across Africa and Asia through so-called assisted return programs. Shamdasani says most of the migrants come from sub-Saharan Africa and are exposed to particularly severe treatment in both official and unofficial detention facilities.
One of the witnesses of a police anti-migrant raid said, if they saw a black person, they would just catch you. They demolished homes, locked people up in jail. They were holding 4,500 black people like dogs.
The UN Human Rights Office is calling on Libya and involved states to take immediate steps to address what it calls an indefensible, unconscionable situation. It says Libyan authorities must end all violations and abuses of migrants' rights. It adds other states should provide more protection to migrants trapped in Libya by increasing safe and regular pathways of admission to their territories. Shamdasani tells VOA the report was shared with Libya prior to its release. She says no formal response has been received, but UN officials will be reaching out again to offer their support in implementing the report's recommendations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Turkey's government recently proposed legislation that will criminalize the spreading of misinformation on social media. The move is drawing national and international criticism, which critics claim is aimed at silencing one of the last platforms for freedom of expression in Turkey ahead of looming elections. For VOA, Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Turkey's so-called disinformation bill drew condemnation from a European legal watchdog that warned the law would threaten freedom of expression and independent journalism ahead of next year's elections. The warning is in a report compiled by the Venice Commission, which advises the Council of Europe. Herdis Geyuf Forgidir Doktur, Vice President of the Venice Commission, says the law would have far-reaching negative effects.
Our main concerns, the chilling effect that this will have on the political debate in Turkey, as the law or this draft law applies to everyone. Secondly, the heavy sanctions, 1 to 3 year imprisonment for those found guilty of disseminating false or misleading information, will lead to widespread self-censorship in the country, which is already struggling in a hostile environment.
Rights groups already rank Turkey among the world's biggest jailer of journalists, a charge Ankara denies. The Turkish government has in recent years introduced several pieces of legislation aimed at controlling social media. But critics say the latest proposed 40-article law is the most severe. Yaman Akdeniz of Turkey's Freedom of Expression Association says social media threatens the government's control of media in general.
Social media usage in Turkey is high, whether it's Twitter, Facebook or other social media platforms. And Turkish people predominantly rely on social media to obtain information because we cannot any longer obtain information from the newspapers in Turkey or even TV channels, because majority of these channels and newspapers are controlled by the governments.
The government argues the proposed legislation is similar to social media controls in other European countries. Thorgeir Dottur says such comparisons are false.
The inspiration from these countries is not relevant because they do not criminalize the dissemination of false information. although they may oblige internet service providers or online platforms to remove illegal content, this is not a valid comparison.
Parliamentary and presidential elections are due in Turkey next year, with the ruling parties and president lagging in the polls. Tightening its control on the media is vital for the government, says journalist Hikmet Adai of the Turkish news portal BNet. He said elections are coming in June 2023, and with the economic crisis ongoing, the government doesn't want this bad news to be disseminated, especially for the world to see the scale of the crisis. This proposed law, he says, represents the heaviest censorship in Turkish press history, so it will definitely affect journalism. The proposed legislation is currently under discussion in Parliament and could become law as early as the end of the month. Doreen Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
In other news, social media reports say floods and landslides in Nepal's Badia district has claimed 35 lives while 12 others remain missing. Several flood victims were displaced and separated from their homes and family owing to the floods, with around 20 people missing across 8 districts. The government has deployed rescue teams, including the army and the police, to search and rescue the victims. The weather department had predicted a downpour to continue to the end of the month. Flash floods and landslides are a common occurrence in the mountainous terrain at the Himalayan nation, especially during the annual monsoon rains between June and September. However, untimely October rains brought an unprecedented hazard to the residents of Nepal, hundreds of whom became homeless, with no sanctuary to seek food and shelter. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Ofor in Washington. One of the world's largest marine citizen science projects starts Wednesday on Australia's Great Barrier Reef. It is the third year that a flotilla of tourism vessels, dive boats, tugboats, superyachts, and recreational vessels will document the effects of climate change. They include coral bleaching caused by warmer sea temperatures and the threats to the 2,300-kilometre coral system. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
42,000 images from 315 individual reefs were collected during the last Great Reef Census. They're analysed by legions of international volunteers or citizen scientists who are helping to chart the health of the world's largest coral system off northeastern Australia. Experts have said that some parts of the Great Barrier Reef are flourishing. Others, though, are under siege from warmer ocean temperatures and more intense tropical storms, as well as coral-eating crown-of-thorn starfish. Warmer seas cause bleaching, forcing the coral to expel microscopic symbiotic algae that gives it most of its energy and colour. Reefs can recover from bleaching, but it can take years. If water temperatures don't return to normal, the coral can die. There have been several mass bleaching events in recent years. Andy Ridley is the chief executive officer of Citizens of the Great Barrier Reef, which organises the annual survey. He told VOA that the reef census hopes to show the overall health of the coral system.
There is no doubt that the effects of climate, whether it be through the bleaching but also through bigger storms, bigger cyclones, is very noticeable. There have been reports this year that there's, you know, significant coral growth across the system. And what will be interesting to find out is whether or not that's still as diverse as it used to be. And that's the kind of thing that maybe the reconnaissance imagery will show.
The surveillance project on the Great Barrier Reef has become so big that artificial intelligence is being used to scan much of the data. The coral system is a key marine biodiversity hotspot and supplies food and income through tourism to millions of people. The United Nations is assessing the impact of global warming on the Great Barrier Reef, as well as localised threats, including pollution and overfishing. Australia's Great Barrier Reef spans 2,300 kilometres, an area about the size of Japan. The Great Reef Census is a collaboration between Australian universities, charities, environmental organisations and the government. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Thank you, Phil. Inside tanks filled with liquid nitrogen are the bodies and heads of 199 humans who opted to be cryopreserved with the hopes of being revived in the future.
Emma Gell of Reuters has more.
Time and death are on pause for the people stored in liquid nitrogen tanks. Patients at the Alcor Life Extension Foundation are clinically dead and cryopreserved. The effort is a gamble by their families on a future in which loved ones can be revived and healed of diseases for which today there is no cure. Max Moore is the former CEO and now an ambassador and president emeritus of the foundation.
We come at the stage where doctors today have given up, where today's medicine and technology is not sufficient to keep you going. But we're saying instead of just disposing of the patient, give them to us. We're going to stabilize them, stop them getting worse, and hold them for as long as it takes for technology to catch up and allow them to come back to life and continue living.
Among those in Alcor's facility, legendary baseball player Ted Williams, who died in 2002 at the age of 83 after suffering from heart disease. Another is Hal Finney, a computer scientist known for being the recipient of the first Bitcoin transaction. He died in 2014 at age 58 from complications of ALS. And future patients may include Paris Hilton, who has reportedly signed up for cryopreservation. As for the procedure, Moore says that after a person has been declared legally dead, he or she is moved into an ice bath where a mechanical CPR device is applied and medications are given to protect against cell damage.
So we're going to stop the patient from returning to consciousness, number one. We're going to stop the blood from clotting. We're going to keep the blood pressure up. All these things we have to do to maintain viability, much as you do when you're donating organs. Just because the person's declared legally dead doesn't mean the body itself is dead. Almost all of it is still alive.
The bodies are not technically frozen, he says, but vitrified, becoming more like a glassy block that holds the cells in place, which happens around minus 110 degrees.
There's no biochemical activity whatsoever, certainly no neurological activity. So at that point, really, it doesn't matter whether you wait a day or 100 years, you're going to be just the same as when you started.
I think this notion of freezing ourselves into the future is pretty science fiction, and it's naive.
The medical world has its cryogenic skeptics, like Dr. Arthur Kaplan, director of the Division of Medical Ethics and professor of bioethics at New York University's Grossman School of Medicine.
The only group that you really see getting excited about the possibility are people who are sort of people who specialize in studying the distant future, or people who have a stake in wanting you to pay the money to do it. I don't really see any mainstream brain scientists, physiologists, people from psychiatry who study the mind. They're not lining up saying, I think this is a sound idea.
Alcor says it does not make any promises or guarantees. It charges a minimum of $200,000 to cryopreserve an entire body, $80,000 to preserve the brain alone. Expensive to some, or perhaps a small price to pay for what Alcor has called an ambulance to the future.
You know, by kind of a crude analogy, you have daytime and you have nighttime, but you also have twilight in between because they kind of shade into one another. So in our view, dying is a process, and cryonics stops that process. It puts dying on a pause and lets you go into the future where we have greater capabilities to reverse that and bring you back to life.
That's Emma Gell of Reuters.
This is Science in a Minute.
On September 26th, NASA's Double Asteroid Redirection Test, or DART, successfully carried out the first test of planetary defense when it was intentionally crashed into an asteroid named Dimorphos. Scientists have been studying data gathered by space and ground-based telescopes to see if the mission was successful in changing the motion of the target asteroid. At a NASA press conference, the DART team demonstrated that the orbit of Dimorphos was successfully changed by the kinetic impact of the spacecraft with the asteroid. The scientists determined this after studying the orbit of the asteroid around its parent, Didymos. They found the impact of DART shortened its orbit by 32 minutes. NASA says the team continues to study the aftermath of the collision. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including President Joe Biden and G7 leaders met virtually to discuss their commitment to support Ukraine and hold Russian President Vladimir Putin accountable for Russia's aggression, including its recent missile strikes across Ukraine. We'll examine this and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. The roots and ramifications of anti-regime protests in Iran, protests against the death in police custody of a young woman, Mahsa Amini, have captured the world's attention and are growing and spreading across Iran. Women and girls are at the forefront of these protests, but hundreds of thousands of Iranians of all ages and backgrounds are joining the opposition. The implications of anti-regime protests in Iran this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinodofa in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In response to the tragic and brutal death of a young Iranian woman, Mahsa Amini, as well as the violent suppression of peaceful protests, Secretary of State Antony Blinken has announced sanctions against Iran's so-called morality police and senior security officials. 22-year-old Mahsa Amini was arrested in Tehran for purportedly wearing a hijab too loosely. She died while in custody of Iran's so-called morality police. Street patrols by the morality police in Iran intensified this summer. President Ibrahim Raisi had called for strict enforcement of laws imposed after the revolution in 1979 that oblige women to cover their hair and wear long, loose-fitting clothes. Protests throughout Iran erupted after Amini's death. They have been met with force by the authorities. The Iranian government's crackdown is ongoing. Authorities have reportedly killed dozens of protesters, and last week the Iranian government cut off access to the internet for most of the 80 million citizens to prevent them and the rest of the world from watching its ongoing violent crackdown on peaceful protesters. In a separate statement, the Treasury Department said the officials designated by the Office of Foreign Assets Control oversee organizations that routinely employ violence to suppress peaceful protests and members of Iran's civil society, political dissidents, women's rights activists, and members of the Baha'i community. The seven designated officials include Iran's Minister of Intelligence and Security, the head of Iran's Morality Police, and the head of its Tehran division. The sanctions also target the deputy commander of the Basij, the deputy commander of Iran's Law Enforcement Forces, the LEF, the LEF commander of Chahar Mahal and Bakhtiari province, and the commander of the Iranian Army's ground forces. These men have been involved in serious rights abuses, including violence against detainees and the use of deadly force against protesters. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen called the death of Mahsa Amini another act of brutality by the Iranian regime's security forces against its own people. She added, "We condemn this unconscionable act in the strongest terms and call on the Iranian government to end its violence against women and its ongoing violent crackdown on free expression and assembly. Today's actions," Secretary Yellen declared, "demonstrates the Biden-Harris administration's clear commitment to stand up for human rights and the rights of women in Iran and globally."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.